Hello, everyone, and welcome to the 365 Message Center show today. This week, we're talking about new ways of handling repeated fissures in Microsoft Forms, adding participants to Microsoft Teams private meeting chat, and oh, by the way, we can now upload files into Microsoft Forms. Roll it.
The following episode was recorded live on YouTube. Check out our website at messagecenter.show for all of our episodes.
Gorgeous live intro there from SP Fest in Chicago. How's Chicago looking, Daniel?
Chicago is cold, but that's expected for it to be cold. But we are doing well. This conference is going well. We've had a couple of days of workshops, and now sessions are starting and having a great time.
Awesome. For those of you joining us too, a slightly different background here. I've had to race into work to try and make things work with my day. Daniel is live at Chicago. And we've also jiggled things up a bit with the way that we do our scene. So thanks for joining us. So big show, lots to get through because we've done a week and a bit, we've circled around. But there's something else that's a bit new in our setup, Dan.
Yes. So we're very happy to announce that as we have grown, we have some wonderful friends that have joined in on and finding value in the podcast. And so for today's episode, we are very happy to announce our new sponsor, Valo Intranet.
We'd like to thank our sponsor, Valo Intranet. Like us, Valo is a huge fan of Microsoft 365 and a friend of the show. So a big thanks goes to Valo. Valo Intranet solutions leverage the best that Microsoft has to offer and can dramatically improve your internal communications with their intelligent internet solution called Valo Intranet. They can also help you take back control of your Office 365 group creation and maintenance, and a whole lot more with Valo Teamwork. Visit them at valointranet.com and book a demo or call today.
Wow, that's awesome. Thanks, Valo, for sponsoring us. So good to have you and your support for the show. It's validation that what we've been doing for a couple of years now, it has been worth it.
Yep, very much so.
So I know we've got a lot to get through, and forgive the awkwardness of the scenes, but I will
I don't know if it's forgiving the awkwardness of you're able to see me, right, when we're going to show the Message Center, you get to see me, so what's bad about that? Okay, that's a joke.
Oh, you know what?
So
Actually have lost your video over the top of it, so I'm not even going to try and fix this. Let's just talk about it and cut it back occasionally.
Fantastic. So first up, we have handling of repeated fissures in forms. Daryl, are you a fisher?
Well, I enjoy fishing. I don't go out often, so you couldn't call me a repeated fisher.
Oh, not that kind of fisher. So this is the PH fisher.
Oh.
So we know about the phishing protection in Microsoft Forms. It is a way for Microsoft is helping you protect against people creating forms and trying to grab the information of people filling in those forms, protected type of information. So if I create a form that says, give me your credit card information, those type of things. So this announcement, which is MC197185, is talking about how Microsoft is going to handle people who are repeated offenders of this. And it's actually... It's interesting, Daryl, I've noticed on it, it's two or more confirmed phishing forms, you're going to be blocked. I mean, that's, you know, it's one strike, you know, two strikes, you're out kind of thing. And I think that's interesting. I like the proactive approach to it. What do you think?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's also, is that block for just the individual or for the whole org? Because what the message talks about too is that it's notifying your global admins that there is someone in your tenant that is using forms in this inappropriate manner, and you'll get that report to say this is the user account that it's that's doing the phishing. Hopefully they don't block the whole tenant.
No. It's not the whole tenant. It is just the user who created the form, and they'll be placed in that restricted user portal so that you'll be able to take action. So if they did it, and maybe they did it a couple times and they shouldn't have been doing it, they didn't know or whatever, you can actually take action and get them unblocked, but it's just the user. So I think it's a pretty good update there, because I don't want people trying to grab, you know, information like that and causing issues, right? So we don't want the bad Joes.
Yep, exactly. Now, you're going to have to tell me which message is next, because I'm following your lead and I've put things in the order of the message ID. But I've got a few other things that are before that. Don't know if we want to mention some of them. Well, at least just to say that at the bottom of my list, now that they're in order of message, some reappeared on our list to say that they were updated, and it was mostly around updates for timing of release pushing out again. So your updated start page for SharePoint is pushed out a bit, and they expect to have that finished in February 2020. If you have live captions arriving, then that is also updated to mid-December, when it will be completed worldwide. And the other announcement, similarly, February 2020 for the SharePoint team site's next steps panel. So just recapping that. It's good to say that the message center is also used to update when timelines and delivery times.
That's right. What
changed?
Right, and it's key to, you know, a point there. I like to sort, especially when preparing for the show, I like to sort instead of the column last updated, which is the default, I like to sort by message ID, so it shows me all of the new stuff. But that doesn't mean you should only look at that view. You should look at the view for last updated, because even though you have reviewed the message, may have changed the messaging inside that message, right? So especially around timing, so that's a good thing to keep track of.
Definitely. So what's the next one on your list, Daniel?
New feature, meeting chat notifications. So this is MC197293. This is all about Microsoft Teams and how it notifies you about chat that's happening within a meeting.
What's the current behavior within a meeting? Because it is interesting. It has changed over time.
It has changed. It's changed from what I find... I was going to say annoying, but that seems kind of negative. So I'm going to say not as helpful behavior of a meeting being in a channel and it constantly pinging and saying, here's all the chats that's going on in that meeting, even if I'm not a part of that meeting. You know, maybe I've exited already. So this is being able to update this to say, I don't want all of those... the messages, especially if I have not joined the meeting or I haven't sent a message. So if I haven't even joined the meeting, I don't want to see the chat that's going on in a Teams meeting. So I can change that in the settings of Teams. And it's live now. I have it in my tenant for targeted release. So the rollout is for early December, which it's already... past early, what I would call early. It's almost mid, and it's supposed to be completed by mid-December, which is, in a few days. So so do you like that change to be, I really don't like it when I'm getting all those prompts and I'm not even part of the message or part of the conversation. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that when we've had Skype for Business meetings in the past, we join them, we close the window, it's gone. We don't see any continuation of conversations in chat. But now within Teams, you've got those standalone meetings that sit in the chat app. And if you've joined the meeting, or maybe you haven't actually in the past, you continue to get these messages. You continue to see that conversation thread. You have to purposefully leave the meeting or mute it to stop getting those notifications. This is good because the change that we're seeing here today is good because we get a little pop-up to say this meeting has started because the first person joins it. And then from that point onwards, we'd get ping, 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 even if we had to make a change in our plans and we couldn't attend it anymore. Now, it's not going to ping you until you actually join that meeting. So, yeah, it's going to quieten things. I think it's a slightly, not misleading, but confusing title for the message, because it's not about giving you notifications. It's about controlling them.
Yes, it is about controlling them. And if you want to talk about misleading titles for a message, the next one is going to really take
It's going to tickle my misleading fancy.
It's going to tickle your fancy. Yes, it's going to tickle.
Okay. SharePoint Classic and Delve Logs.
Yes, so this is MC197403. Everyone, I want everyone to pay attention to this. I'm going to read this, and it's going to shock everyone. Retirement of SharePoint Classic and Delve Blocks. So if you read that, you're thinking, oh, well, SharePoint Classic is going away, and so we're in trouble, right? Because so many people have SharePoint Classic sites. This is not what this is. It's actually SharePoint Classic Blogs. That site template is going away, and Delve Blogs are going away. Mm-hmm. So soapbox time here a little bit. One is the title, totally misleading. It needs to say SharePoint Classic Blogs are being retired. The second kind of point of contention here is this is a functionality that is being used. These two, the blogging, this is how Microsoft has suggested people to do blogging in SharePoint for the longest time. Now we're being told that beginning January 18th, the classic blog site template will be changed to say blogs retired in parentheses. Mm-hmm. And then mid-July of 2020, you will no longer be able to create SharePoint blogs. I do like the fact that they've pushed that out so far. So it's a mid-July. So it's not that some updates we've seen recently, it's been, oh, you have approximately 3.5 days to figure out what you're going to do. So, and then Delve Blogs beginning January 18th, which is the same for the classic blogs. But January 18th, you will no longer be able to create new Delve blogs. So no people will not be able to go to their Delve profile and create a blog site from there. February 18th, which is a month after that, you won't be able to create any new or even edit existing posts in your Delve blog if you already have one. And then the same date, July 17th of 2020, all Delve blogs, all of them, posts as well as the sites will be deleted and removed. So this is one of those instances that Microsoft is not just turning off functionality and not allowing you to create it. They're actually going to delete your content. Your content is going away July 17th, whether you want it to or not. So you do need to prepare for this.
Yeah, definitely. Now, you can see the motivation for this is to try and encourage people to start using communication sites for blogs and really take advantage of that method. I know that there is quite a history for people to create their personal blog, sit in with within their SharePoint My Site, and then it was their own Delve sites, and then you've got your classic blog site template. Are you seeing some grumbling and resistance? Because, I mean, we've seen modern sites and its new features coming for some time. Is this just something that people need to start really thinking about transitioning to?
So to answer the question, have I seen some grumbling? Yes. This is a feature that is being used a lot by organizations, and actually more so than they think. I've had conversations with some of my clients and they've, oh, we don't use that. And well, okay, let's go out and try to and see. And they're kind of surprised by how much it is used. Now, whether it's used frequently or not, that, you know, that's different and varies between organizations, but it is used. There's some grumbling about, wow, not only about turning it off. I get it. We're moving into this new world of, you know, we've been saying it's modern SharePoint. Now it's just the SharePoint now, right? And then we have Classic. Mm-hmm. But, so we're trying to move that content along. I get it. But actually deleting content, it's aggressive. At least we have time to get there. I think what's going to be interesting is seeing what happens in the community. on providing ways for organizations to take those blog sites and turn them into comm sites. You know, in a if it's automated or if it's a semi-automated manner, I think it'll be interesting to see what we see there or what comes there. I do know of a couple of people that are actually working on some things. So I think there will be some tools that'll help us do that transition. We just don't have them now, but we do need to start planning now.
There is a lot of valuable information in even the older blogs. If you think about blogs on other platforms, you know, they're still being searched for content, for inspirational thought, maybe methods and things that people have shared. And it is that way that we've been encouraged to be quite personal in the way that we share our content. I get that, you know, it's good to start thinking about moving to the modern structure. But yeah, I'm hoping to see, as you say, a simple way that people can migrate their content over rather than creating and recreating pages page after page. The thing I do agree with, though, and Dean has brought this up in the chat in Periscope, about Delve blogs and about those personal blogs that hung off your My Sites, it was hard to promote them because they were there. Sure, they were attached to your profile, so people might find them that way. But as a communication site, they're easier to bring that content up. You get the power of hub sites and surfacing that news into hubs as well. So a lot of advantages, I would say.
It is a lot of advantages, but technically under the covers, those sites were indexed, and it was a site type. And so actually, while there wasn't an out-of-the-box, you know, here I want to show Delve blogs here, you could easily do it via search. And I know third-party, including our sponsor for today's show, Valo Internet, does have a capability of surfacing those Delve blogs. I also know they have they're working on a plan to work on a migration effort there, too, for customers. So, but it is something that is used, and we just need to start planning. I think that's the key for us today for this one is this is one, while we do have a time frame, especially for SharePoint Classic blogs, we do have a time frame that will allow us to do some migration or work on the effort. We do need to go ahead and start planning for that now.
Definitely. So do note those dates as we close off this message. Note those dates and work to them. If we're lucky or we voice our concerns, there may be an extension, but be sure that the way that we're going forward is we'll be using communication sites.
I highly doubt there's going to be any continuation to this or extension. There's already been some extension to this.
Right.
I think it's going to happen. This is one of those where the only way that it won't happen is if everyone rises up with pitchforks and torches. I don't really recommend doing that. That's kind of threatening. But for the next item, we have add participants to Teams meeting chat, MC197451. So, Daryl, do you have on occasion to be having, you know, meeting, private meeting chat? So, and then wanting, oh, maybe we should add, you know, Sally to this conversation. Do you ever run into that situation in Teams?
Yeah, well, is this purely just group chat and then we're just adding additional people, or is this a special kind of, we've started it as a meeting and now it's a continuation of chat and we're adding people to it?
Yeah, this is that I'm starting a meeting with you, okay? Right. One-on-one meeting, private meeting. Mm-hmm. And then we're like, well, let's bring in Sally because she's the one that actually knows about this topic way better than us. Mm-hmm. And she can really give us some insight on roadmap or whatever it is, right? So we add her via the chat, and it actually now allows her to not only chat, but join the meeting as well.
That's cool. Yep. I think that's quite useful to be able to bring people in via text and then at their own pace also be joined to the meeting.
To the meeting, that's right. So this one is rolling out, it says mid-December, which is quite soon. But I mean, it's seems like a simple ad, but I think it's one of those that more and more people will start using.
Yep, Well, the same considerations apply too as you're adding people. You can see from the screenshot that you can choose to include chat history or not. So think about that in a scenario where you're running a meeting, you've just had a chat about something, but you don't necessarily want that new person joining to see everything that's in that chat. You do have control right. over whether they see history for a certain number of days
right.
or not at all.
Right, exactly.
All right, moving on.
Yes, sir. New feature introducing file upload for Microsoft Forms. This is MC197486, gradually rolling out early December, which we've already passed. The rollout will be completed by the end of December. And this is being able to create a question in Forms that's really just a file upload. It's not a question at all. And actually, a fellow member of Regarding 365 created a blog post on this. Lorian did a blog post on this feature and with some nice screenshots on it. So definitely recommend you going to regarding365.com and viewing that post. It's good stuff and good information about how you go about it. It's not in my tenant yet, so I didn't know all the steps, but he has highlighted that. Here's a key. If the form is an Office 365 group form, right? Mm-hmm. So you're creating it from within the group, then the file that's uploaded as part of the form will be actually added to the SharePoint library.
That makes sense. Okay? Definitely.
Yep. So if it's a form that I'm creating outside of an Office 365 group, then when I add that file upload, then the file will actually be uploaded into my OneDrive.
Oh, okay. Yep. Yep.
Right? Because it's not attached to the group. So wanted to kind of mention that. I think the file upload limit is something like a gig or something. It's huge. Mm. And then the last thing I want to mention is with Microsoft Forms, you can have forms that are filled out anonymously, right? We can share those. You don't have to log in. It's anonymous. And anyone in the world can fill them out. However, anonymous users will not be able to upload files. I have not been able to test because, like I said, it's not my tenant yet. But I asked Lorian, and he said he's tested it, and it does not work. So if you think about that, it makes sense. Because if you allowed anonymous uploads on an Office 365 form, then anonymous people could add files to your library. And what if your library – anyway, it gets – so it's not allowed. For anonymous users.
Well, we might see that scenario built out a bit to potentially provide a safer way, scanning it with ATP, all sorts of things like that. Phil Worrell brings up too that a result of that too is that those forms using that functionality are not available externally. So you don't even get the opportunity to share it if you're going to be adding or attaching a file.
Right. Yep. So as is pretty normal with our messages, there's absolutely nothing you need to do to prepare for this change.
Well,
so
that's true. Don't tell anyone. Don't even tell them to read Lorian's blog.
Right.
They'll find it themselves, I'm sure.
but they do, of course, with the standard boilerplate. But you might consider updating your user training and notifying help desk.
Yeah. No, you will definitely need to do that.
Yes.
And do shape that up to give some guidance around when you would use this feature and how it might be used to gather information from people internally in terms of submissions, but advise that it's not available externally at all.
All right, Daryl, next up, what's your next message you got?
We've got Microsoft Teams commercial cloud trial updates. Will soon be replaced with Teams Exploratory Experience.
This is MC197570. So this is improving the trial experience that allows your existing AAD, so Azure Active Directory users in your organization who are not licensed for Teams, to initiate a trial for the product.
And looks like you can include Exchange Mailbox component. So if you're setting up that team, then they're allowing you to, in a sense, trial Exchange as well, which is pretty generous. In the past, we haven't really seen Exchange functionality, like being able to create any calendar appointments for meetings and teams until you actually go ahead and move your mailboxes into Exchange Online. But in a trial sense, this is great.
So here's the thing. I'm wondering, and this just came to my head, I don't know any inside knowledge of this, but remember we've been talking about users being able to purchase their own licenses in the Power platform. Wouldn't this be an easy way to enable users to sign up for their own trials and then go ahead and pay for their own licensing for teams? Wouldn't this be an interesting way for them to be able to enable that? I'm not saying they are. This is just what came to mind.
Yeah, that'd be a dangerous game to play in the government's sector, right?
Well, it's a dangerous game to play in the Power platform too. So, but they're doing it anyway. So, I think that it'll be interesting to see if that actually happens.
All right.
Next up, very short message. MC197722. Microsoft Flow is becoming Power Automate. If you've been living under a rock and haven't been paying attention, Microsoft Flow is now being renamed to Power Automate. It's already done. This was announced at Microsoft Ignite conference this year. Now, the individual workflows that are happening in Power Automate are still called Flow. They're flows. Mm-hmm. Okay. So that part is not being renamed, but it is now Power Automate. Anything else you want to say?
No, just it's really emphasizing that there is no specific action you need to take.
But there's nothing you can take other than maybe update your slides, which I have done, and update your methods of communication. If you've created a Yammer group, soon to be a community, but a Yammer group for Microsoft Flow, you might want to rename that to Power Automate.
Yeah, and just know that it'll still be called Flow in the background. That's fine. I think it's an interesting history with this message and the direction Microsoft have gone with, self-service and Power Automate. It's all about here it comes, and then this feels like a light reminder, a message to say it's still coming, and we've renamed it.
Yeah. It's kind of interesting that, a rename is pretty big, so I guess, but it's interesting that it's in the message center here for the name. It's just, I get it, though, it's kind of big, actually renaming a service that a bunch of people use, so I understand. But I'm way more excited about the next message, Daryl.
Well, you have to tell me because, you've completely thrown me by saying order it by message number, and if anything, we will retitle this episode as the episode that illustrates that messages arrive at different times in people's message centers.
They do.
It's a long title,
This one is new feature Outlook on the Web as a progressive web app. MC197736. I use Outlook on the Web a lot. And because it has features that Outlook desktop client does not have. Mm-hmm. That I like. And so I actually use it a lot, even if I have Outlook on the desktop. So this is Outlook on the Web becoming this PWA, the Progressive Web App, and being able to basically create shortcuts in the start menu to launch a Chromium-based browser to be able to automatically load it up. And so it's kind of like another desktop app, kind of.
Yeah, definitely.
It's not the same, but it's not. So this is using Microsoft Edge, the beta version of Edge that's Chromium-based, or, of course, Google Chrome.
It's going to be interesting for consultants like us that might be working across multiple mailboxes. In one sense, we can use the Outlook desktop and bring all those mailboxes together in one app. But I like to use different profiles in Chrome to represent the tenants that I'm working in for that particular project. And I expect that the Progressive Web App for Outlook, I could have multiple Progressive Web Apps based on the profiles for each browser. But that's something to test, I guess.
Yes, I totally agree with you. Being able to test that with profiles would be awesome. So gradually rolling this out mid-December, which is soon, completing the rollout by the end of January 2020.
Awesome.
And there's a learning how to use link at the bottom of this message. So learning how to use the web version like a desktop app. So there's already a support.office.com article about it.
Yeah, and that's actually a really good thing to point your end users to. Yeah, like you, I think that the features and the way that the Outlook web app operates are just awesome. You know, a lot of intelligence features that come to that first, of course, because it's easier to develop for the web. So, yeah, looking forward to seeing that.
Yep. So I have one more message, and it's about it's threat protection. But before I talk about that, I want to make sure that everyone here live and everyone at the conference knows that I have stickers for the show, and I have plenty of them. So you can come up and get them at the table, or if you see me sometime this week, please ask for a sticker because I have plenty of them, and I don't want to take them home.
And you're not necessarily offering to post them out to people who are interested on the net. I've seen that done by some of our friends, and they've had to send out quite a few.
No, I'm not going to mail them to you. However, if you pay me enough, then I probably will.
It
depends on how much it's worth to you.
Well, I mean, we could invest some of that Valo sponsor money into, back into that. That'd be cool.
Moving right along.
Moving along.
New features. Advanced threat protection campaign views and public preview. This is MC197802. Advanced threat protection campaign views is a new feature in Office 365, but being able to view the campaign and see what's going on while it's going, I think is actually fantastic. Have you used ATP a lot, Daryl?
No, I can't say I have. And so, this is where some of our viewers and followers will be, is that sometimes we look at messages like this and it's not our focus area. And I would assume just from that, asking, what is a campaign for ATP? Is it that someone is running a attack campaign against me and I can go in this dashboard and see it being played out?
Yeah, so this is the campaigns to be able to view specific types of attack, so scope of attack, and kind of getting the big picture of that and really look at what's going on and the timeline, the verdicts, the filtering and such. So being able to see, because we can schedule these campaigns within our organization, right? We could create these wonderful looking emails that look exactly like what we would send our employees. We can create this campaign in ATP to send out to our employees, hey, everyone, we need you to go to the HR system and click this link to update all of your, private information. And we can track when we send that out, who's clicking on the link so that we can, how should we say, re-educate them?
Oh, I see. The campaign is a positive one, like an ethical hack. Yes.
Right. So this is the, hey, you clicked on the link, so now you got to go through training again so that you can learn not to click on phishing attack links.
Got it. Yeah, that makes sense.
So this is in public preview for this campaign view, this overall seeing how it went and who clicked and all of that, so you can filter down to who clicked and when and what link they actually clicked in the email. So this is fun. I think this is kind of the fun part of security is tricking people into clicking bad links. But they're bad links. They're just,
As long as it ends in some kind of chocolate or bribe or reward for the IT.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm probably going to get in tons of trouble saying that. Look, is there anything else you wanted to add in terms of observations and things that you've seen discussed in the community this week?
I haven't seen any big ones this week. Discussions about things changing or any breaking. We did have some issues with Azure. I think it was late last week. So I had some issues with SharePoint going down and stuff like that. But that may have been regional. It was definitely in my region. But nothing that, nothing that's big that's come along for changes. How about you?
Just to say that Outlook, was it Do Not Disturb feature has arrived in general availability for the mobile app. I'd seen that earlier because I was on a test flight build, and now it's available. Good to use that. Take a look at it. Again, a blog post that we have there. I've dropped something up there on regarding 365 about the value of being able to have control over those Outlook notifications and turning them off during periods when you really should be not focusing so much on work and being human.
That's awesome. Thank you, everyone, for joining us today on the show. And thank you for our live studio audience that's here at SharePoint Fest. And thank you, Daryl.
Yeah, thank you, Daniel. See you again, everyone.
All right.